Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our clinical focus discussion on kidney stones, their treatment and prevention. And in part one, we went through some of the causes, and we introduced the idea of the low oxalate diet for the majority of patients suffering from kidney stones. That's about 85% who suffer from calcium oxalate stones. And for those suffering from uric acid stones, the remaining 15%, the low purine diet, also with emphasis on reduction of especially fructose. Fruit sugar often is transformed into uric acid. And so even patients who are cautioned to be on a low meat diet, they may consume too much fruit or drink too much fruit juice, and that will keep their uric acid levels high. Or alternatively, they may be drinking soda that is sweetened with high fructose corn syrup that drives their uric acid up. So in general, not a great idea. You know, most of us are aware that drinking soda is not a good idea. But for some, fruit can be a loophole. Many fruits also are high in oxalate. So you got to check the list. Many listings, the listings abound on the internet, so easy to find. Okay, so when it comes to calcium supplementation, this has been controversy. There's been a lot of controversy, but it turns out that calcium supplementation in moderation is fine for patients who've had kidney stones. And one of the reasons for that, you may say, well, that calcium will be will end up being excreted in your urine, and that will increase the risk of calcium complexing with oxalate, forming calcium oxalate, and you'll get a calcium oxalate stone. Well, unless you consume vast amounts of calcium, most of the calcium that you consume orally via diet or via supplements is going to help to bind to the oxalate in the intestinal tract. It'll actually help to remove and neutralize the oxalate. So in some ways, it's not a great idea to totally restrict your calcium, because the calcium actually can help to bind to the oxalate and help sweep it out of your gastrointestinal tract so it doesn't get reabsorbed in your bloodstream and then ultimately filtered out through your kidneys. So that's, I think, it's an old saw that people who have had calcium, who consume a lot of, who consume calcium are at risk, then you should get no calcium whatsoever. You know, don't take, 2,000 milligrams of calcium daily. You may only need, 400 or 800 milligrams of calcium daily to meet your requirements, even if you're a woman who suffers from osteoporosis. Many of my patients, for one reason or another, don't tolerate much calcium, and they do fine when we enhance their bone with the strategies that we use for osteoporosis, which is a topic for another clinical focus. If you're going to take calcium, the best form of calcium is calcium citrate. Why? Because citrate is actually really nice for preventing kidney stones. And the way that you can introduce citrate is, well, there's several ways. You know, calcium citrate, and then you get your calcium, you get some citrate. It's also the most one of the most absorbable forms of calcium. A medication used for prevention of oxalate kidney stones is called polycitric K. It's just potassium citrate. And it's higher levels of potassium in the urine, somewhat protect against stones. I personally, I never prescribe polycitra. Many nephrologists do. But I just prescribe magnesium citrate, because there's definite relationship between intake of magnesium and the risk of kidney stones, because magnesium actually helps to reduce the risk of stones forming, and then you get the nice effect of the citrate. The only problem with magnesium citrate is that among the magnesium forms, it's one of the most laxative forms. So if I have patients who are constipated, they love magnesium citrate. If I have patients who are already prone to loose bowel movements, they may not tolerate magnesium citrate that well, and we give them a more neutral form of magnesium, like magnesium glycinate. Or we give them jigsaw magnesium, which is actually a form of magnesium that doesn't cause much in the way of gastrointestinal speed up. So the other thing that is a real misconception is that vitamin D causes kidney stones. That is an old saw. And this is actually what they taught us in medical school is, oh, we got to watch out for vitamin D. Don't give too much, because if you give too much, you'll get calcium deposits and stones in your kidneys. And that is theoretically plausible, because vitamin D does enhance calcium absorption. In fact, vitamin D is necessary for calcium absorption. And that's why you give vitamin D to patients who have osteoporosis, because that helps them absorb their calcium better. And then the calcium hopefully goes to the bone. But it turns out that many patients who have stones are actually vitamin D deficient. And here's why. If you're vitamin D deficient, you develop something called secondary hyperparathyroidism. Your calcium levels are sometimes high, and that can actually, in the bloodstream, and ultimately in the urine, and that can be corrected by giving patients moderate to heavy doses of vitamin D to correct the low vitamin D. And you have to really follow the blood tests, because if you go too high, then indeed you can promote kidney stones. I think I've had only one case in all my years of practice, even in prescribing high doses of vitamin D, possibly causing a kidney stone in one patient who got a little overzealous. His vitamin D levels were over 100, and he really responded rather quickly to the vitamin D supplementation. He unusually fast metabolizer of vitamin D, or efficient absorber of vitamin D, and his vitamin D levels went high, and ultimately that may or may not have precipitated a kidney stone. By the way, kidney stones take a really long time to form, so if you take a supplement on Monday and you have a kidney stone on Thursday, it's doubtful that that supplement caused that kidney stone, because the kidney stone may have taken months and months and years to develop, you know, before it reached a size where it became noticeable, or ultimately it became dislodged. So that's one controversy that needs to be put to bed. And yes, you can overdose on vitamin D, so levels need to be monitored. But by no means, if you had kidney stones, should you completely avoid vitamin D. That would be a mistake. And I've actually argued this issue with even kidney specialists in the past, and they now, in 2014, many of them come around to my view of the world that vitamin D is a two-edged sword. You know, it's kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, too hot, too cold, just right. You want it in the mid-range, not too low and not too high. Okay, so vitamin C, that's another controversy. It was taught to me that in medical school, back in medical school, that vitamin C can cause calcium oxalate stones. And that's because if you follow one of the pathways by which vitamin C is metabolized, ultimately it ends up as oxalic acid. And so, at least theoretically, that may be the case. However, in practice, does it really matter? Well, it's been argued both ways. And I'm sharing with you an article published in Journal of the American Medical Association recently, which states, file this under, if a little bit is good, a lot isn't necessarily better. Taking high-dose vitamin C appears to double a man's risk of developing painful kidney stones. Swedish researchers detailed a connection between kidney stone formation and use of vitamin C supplements among more than 23,000 Swedish men. Over an 11-year period, about 2% of the men developed kidney stones. Those who reported taking vitamin C supplements were twice as likely to experience the misery of kidney stones. So, what they're saying here is that the efforts of Nobel laureate Linus Pauling were misguided. Too many people now believe that extra vitamin C can prevent colds and supercharge their immune system, detoxify their body, protect the heart, fight cancer, etc. And it's potentially a cause of kidney stones. So another study, however, says something quite different. And that is, it's a study that comes to us from the Linus Pauling Institute. It's a bastion of research on vitamin C. We recently interviewed Dr. Baltz Fry, who is PhD professor of biochemistry and biophysics and director of the endowed chair at the Linus Pauling Institute. And so he claims that vitamin C is not likely to be related to kidney stones. And so the studies, they've gone back and forth on this. And I have to say that, you know, the vast majority of patients are taking vitamin C in, you know, moderate doses. I'm not suggesting that patients take the doses that Linus Pauling recommended. We now recognize that vitamin C is probably not that well absorbed past a dosage of about 250 milligrams at a time. So if a patient takes three doses of 250 or even 500 milligrams of vitamin C two or three times a day, they're not going to boost their risk significantly. And here's a study from the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, 1999, which again suggests that vitamin C is not a major factor. They note that vitamin C can be metabolized to oxalic acid. So they did a study to examine the association between intakes of vitamin B6 and C. We'll talk about B6 in a moment, and the risk of kidney stone formation in women. Many of these other studies were done in men, so there may be a difference between men and women. But when it comes to women, vitamin C intake was not associated with risk. So they conclude that routine restriction of vitamin C to prevent stone formation appears unwarranted. So clearly, this is controversial. There's not a scientific consensus. And it may be that in a certain subset of the population, highly prone to stones, that we may not want to administer high-dose vitamin C. And then we have the problem of we give intravenous vitamin C at super high doses. I got to tell you that I have probably given very high doses of intravenous vitamin C to perhaps thousands of patients over the last 30 years of my career. And I cannot think of maybe one or two might have experienced kidney stones while under my care, which is, I think, pretty good considering that the overall rate of kidney stones anyway in the general populace is around 1%. So if we're giving them kidney stones with intravenous vitamin C, I think we'd see a lot, you know, we would see scores of people getting kidney stones after intravenous vitamin C. And many of my colleagues who also administer lots of IV vitamin C note the same. They're not seeing patients developing kidney stones left and right. So I think we can put that particular controversy to bed. So now let's talk about vitamin B6, because I always give vitamin B6 to my patients who have kidney stones. I recommend that they take 100 to 200 milligrams of vitamin B6 daily. And in the same study that you just mentioned, where they concluded that vitamin C made no difference in women anyway when it comes to kidney stones, they found that a high intake of vitamin B6 was inversely associated with the risk of stone formation. In other words, the more B6 consumed, the less the risk of stone formation. And so what they found is that compared to those who had the highest B6, compared to those who had the lowest B6, the women who had the highest B6 had about just two-thirds of the risk of having kidney stones. And B6 deficiency is fairly common, especially in people who don't take any vitamins whatsoever, people on junky diets. So B6, I think, can be used to help prevent kidney stones. It's not commonly known. I don't know many nephrologists who acknowledge this, but it's one of the things that we use for prevention along with magnesium citrate. So the other thing that can be used, and this is very useful for kidney stone prevention, is lemon juice, because lemon juice is rich in citric acid or citrate, and it's not high in oxalic acid, so it's an ideal juice to drink to prevent kidney stones. So the suggestion is you take about a half cup of lemon juice. It can be freshly squeezed or you can use concentrate. A half cup And that's really tart if you just take it straight. So you may want to dilute it with a lot of water, about 7 cups of water, and drink it throughout the day. You can keep big bottle of lemon juice in the refrigerator at home or at work, and especially on hot days, drink a lot of lemon juice. And don't put a lot of sugar in it. You should resist the temptation because it's going to be pretty tart. And don't put a lot of artificial sweetener in it because that's not great. That can be a very helpful part of a strategy to avoid repeat kidney stones. Another suggestion, and this is a little bit off the beaten track, but vitamin K2. It's interesting. Vitamin K2 prevents calcification in the arteries, and it also enhances uptake of calcium into the bones. So, for whatever reason, intake of vitamin K2, and I use the product called MK7, 90 micrograms twice daily for my patients with osteoporosis, and patients with kidney stones may consider taking vitamin K2. It should be vitamin K2, not vitamin K1, as a preventive against kidney stones. Other people have cited vitamin A as playing a role in it. I'm not so sure. One thing to be wary of is many patients who have urinary problems drink cranberry juice because they think it flushes the kidneys and it prevents bacterial infections. Actually, studies on cranberry juice kind of go back and forth. Some studies show that they do prevent, that cranberry juice or cranberry concentrate in tablets prevents urinary tract infections. Other studies say, no, it doesn't really do the job. The problem with cranberry juice is it's rich in oxalic acid. And so for stones, it's not the ideal juice. So here's an interesting study from the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2002. Effect of blackcurrant, cranberry, and or plum juice consumption on risk factors associated with kidney stone formation. They compared these juices. Investigations were carried out in male subjects, and what they found was that cranberry juice decreased the urinary pH, made it more acidic, whereas the excretion of oxalic acid and the relative supersaturation for uric acid were increased. That's not great when it comes to the risk of stones. On the other hand, black currant juice was good. It increased the urinary pH, it alkalinized it, and it promoted the excretion of citric acid, which is good, which counteracts calcium oxalate stones. And it also promoted the excretion of oxalic acid. So that's a good property of black currant juice. So you can drink black currant juice galore. The plum juice had no significant effect on the urinary composition, and therefore it is concluded by the researchers that black currant juice could support the treatment and prophylaxis of especially uric acid stone disease because of its alkalinizing effect. They're not so sure about the impact on calcium oxalate stones. So I think that this is more directed towards the 15% of people who have uric acid stones. They do say that for the stones that are associated with urinary tract infections, such as the rare brushite and struvite stones that we don't talk about much here, cranberry juice acidifies the urine. It could be useful in stones that are associated with chronic urinary tract infections. But those are less common, and you should check the composition of your stone before you start guzzling cranberry juice. If it's one of these rare types, that may be beneficial. So that's about all I have to say on the subject of kidney stones. And if you have additional questions, you can email them to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll answer them on one of our weekly sessions, Q&A with Layla, where we take up your audience questions. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.